All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a pleasant 65 degrees and overcast, soon to be raining here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Monday? We titled the show AI Hover Taxis, Air and Sea Drones, and Home Facial Recognition. We looked a little bit at some of the new neuromorphic chips that Intel was creating to be able to utilize these new Loki chips to have its own built-in artificial intelligence engine, and then some of the things that they are planning on doing with artificial intelligence. They had some military stuff going on with these new undersea combat squadron drones that sound pretty frightening. And then this new DARPA radar that could see through clouds down to the ground to be able to target an enemy from anywhere up above. We had these new facial recognition technologies, too, that are coming to the home through the acquired Nest product line that Google acquired. Not only is it going to be your home security system with facial recognition technology, but also your doorbell, so you could tag people and have it alert you when they show up. Well, today we're going to take a look at something a little bit different. I came across a story this morning that sort of sent me down a rabbit hole. You know how that goes. So it was under the heading of CIA. I have a bunch of different searches that I have mapped into my Google News for different topics. And this was under the heading of CIA. This is the CIA within academy, as in the academic higher education realm. It's a brand new book, and I think I might actually get it. It's called Spy Schools. A brand new book documents how foreign and domestic intelligence agencies use and perhaps exploit higher education and academy for spy operations. Foreign and domestic intelligence services spar and spy on one another all across the world, but it would be naive to think it is not happening in the lab or the classroom as well. In his new book, Spy School, How the CIA, FBI, and Foreign Intelligence Secretly Exploited America's Universities, investigative journalist Donald Golden explores the fraught and sometimes exploitative relationship between higher education and intelligence services, both foreign and domestic. Chapters explore various case studies of the CIA and the FBI using the open and collaborative nature of higher education to their advantage, as well as foreign governments infiltrating via the U.S. education system. It is pretty widespread, and I'd say it's most prevalent at research universities, says Golden, an editor at ProPublica, an alumnus of the Boston Globe Spotlight team, told Insider Ed. The foreign intelligence services have the interest and the opportunity to learn cutting-edge Pentagon-funded or government-funded research. And remember, we've looked a lot at that. A lot of these research dollars are coming from either an alphabet agency or someone such as DARPA to be able to exploit our best and our brightest at some of the higher level universities. Golden, who has also covered higher education for the Wall Street Journal, previously wrote about the intersection of wealth and admissions in his 2006 book called The Price of Admission. In each of these case studies in Spy Schools, which goes on sale October 10th, is critical, and one could read the chapters on the Chinese government's interest in U.S. research universities as hawkish, but then turn to the next chapter on Harvard's relationship with the CIA and read it as critical of the American intelligence establishment as well. People of one political persuasion might focus on the chapters regarding foreign espionage. People of another political persuasion might focus on domestic espionage, and I try to follow where these facts lead. And perhaps the most prestigious institution Golden examines is Harvard University, which where Georgie Porgy Church works, and probing its cozy relationship with the CIA. They were involved in the MK Ultra experiments back in the 50s and 60s. While Harvard has recently come under scrutiny for its relationship with the agency after it withdrew an invitation to Chelsea Manning for being a visiting fellow, after the agency objected to her appointment, this book was written before the Manning incident, which occurred in September. The university, which has had varying degrees of closeness and coldness with the CIA over the years, currently allows the agency, now listen to this, so Harvard allows the CIA to send officers to the Mint Career Program at the Kennedy School of Government while continuing to act undercover with the school's knowledge. Ding. And when the officers apply to Harvard, often with fudged credentials that are part of their CIA cover, the university doesn't know that they are CIA agents, but once they get in, Harvard allows them to tell the university that they are undercover. Their fellow students, however, often high-profile or soon-to-be high-profile actors in the world of international diplomacy, are kept in the dark. Kenneth Moscow is one of a long line of CIA officers who have enrolled undercover at the Kennedy School, generally with Harvard's knowledge and approval, gaining access for up-and-comers worldwide, Golden writes, and for four decades, the CIA and Harvard have concealed this practice, which raises larger concerns about academic boundaries, the integrity of class discussions and student interactions, and whether an American university has a responsibility to accommodate U.S. intelligence. But the CIA isn't the only intelligence group operating at Harvard. Golden notes that Russian spies have enrolled at the Kennedy School, although without Harvard's knowledge or cooperation. And when contacted by Inside Higher Ed, Harvard officials didn't deny Golden's telling, but defended the university's practice while emphasizing that the agreement between the university and the CIA, which Golden also writes about, on not using Harvard to conduct CIA fieldwork like they did in the past. Harvard's Kennedy School does not knowingly provide false information or cover for any member of our community of intelligence, nor do we allow members from our community to carry out intelligence operations at Harvard Kennedy School, says Eric Rochbach, co-director of the Kennedy School of Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs, in a statement. While Golden said the CIA's involvement on campus raises existential questions about the purpose and the integrity of higher education, Harvard maintains that the Kennedy School was living up to its mission. Our community consists of people from different spheres of public service. We are proud to train people from the U.S. government and the intelligence community, as well as peace activists for those who favor a more open government. We train students from a wide range of foreign countries and foreign governments, including, among others, Israel, the UK, Russia, and China, and that is consistent with our mission, and we are proud to have that reach. On the other hand, other countries are interested in exploiting U.S. higher education. Golden documents the case of Rupeng Liu, a graduate student at Duke University who siphoned off U.S. government-funded research to Chinese researchers. Liu eventually returned to China and has used some of the research for his Chinese government-funded startup ventures. Golden is comprehensive, interviewing Duke researchers who worked with Liu, as well as dispatching a freelance journalist to China to interview Liu. He denied wrongdoing, saying that his actions were taken as part of the higher education's collaborative norms regarding research projects. Despite questions that arose when Liu was a student, he received his doctorate in 2009 without any formal questions or pushback from the university. A week before Liu defended his dissertation, Golden notes that Duke officials voted to move forward in negotiations with the Chinese government regarding opening a Duke campus in China. Ding, ding, ding. Now, we read about that a couple times in a few of the stories that we've covered over the last few months, where we have these U.S. universities that are opening divisions in China to do research in things such as artificial intelligence and collaborating with the Chinese, raising questions about whether Duke was cautious about punishing a Chinese student, lest that there were negative implications for the businesses for Duke. Duke professor who worked with Liu told Golden that it would be hard to prove Lou acted with intentional malice rather than out of genuine cultural and translational obstacles or ethical slips made by a novice researcher. The awarding of Lou's degree had absolutely no connection to the deliberations over a proposal for Duke to participate in the founding of a new university in Kunshan, China. There are just two chapters of Golden's book which go on to document the foreign exchange relationship between Marietta College in Ohio and the controversial Chinese Intelligence-Aligned University of International Relations agreements between Marietta and the Chinese Intelligence-Aligned University of International Relations, which is widely regarded as a recruiting ground for Chinese intelligence services, include exchanging professors and sending Chinese students to Marietta. Conversely, as American professors teach students from this Chinese university who could end up spying on the U.S., American students at Marietta are advised against studying abroad at the University of International Relations in China if they have an interest in working for the U.S. government. Because studying at the University of International Relations in China carries a risk for students hoping to get certain security clearances. Another highlight is a chapter documenting the CIA's effort to stage phony international academic conferences put on to lure things such as Iranian nuclear scientists as attendees and to get them out of their country in a position to defect to the U.S. According to Golden sources, the operations, combined with other efforts, have been successful enough to hinder Iran's nuclear weapons program. But Golden's book does not shed light on previously untold stories, and it highlights the existential questions facing higher education, not only when dealing with infiltration from foreign governments, but also those brought on by cozy relationships between U.S. intelligence and academy. One issue is American national security, says Golden. Universities do a lot of research that's important to our government and to our military, and they don't take very strong precautions against it being stolen. So the domestic espionage side, I am kind of a traditionalist, and I believe in the idea that universities are places where the brightest minds of all countries can come together to learn, teach each other, and study research. Espionage from both sides taints that, and it is kind of disturbing. Yeah, you would think so. So would it be hard to tighten up intellectual property rules or have a written collaboration agreement and have more courses about intellectual safeguarding? In the 70s, Harvard adopted guidelines against U.S. intelligence trying to recruit foreign students in an undercover way. They didn't become standard practice across the academy anyway, but I still think those guidelines are pertinent and colleges would do well to take a second look at them. In idealistic dreamer mode, he says it would be wonderful if the UN or some other global organization would take a look at this issue and say, can we declare universities off limits to espionage? Dun, dun, dun. Or intelligence agencies for that matter. So here's a story that I found published out of the Harvard Crimson, and this appears to be a Harvard blog or newspaper, dated September 28, 1977. CIA papers link Harvard to mind control project, and this is MKUltra. The Central Intelligence Agency informed university officials this week that Harvard, quote, was involved in one way or another in two research projects conducted under the agency's MKUltra human behavior control experiments, says Daniel Steiner of 1954 from Harvard, general counsel to the university. Steiner said the university received substantial financial records from the CIA outlining Harvard's involvement in the controversial mind control program. He refused to release any details about the documents yesterday, but said the two research projects in question did not include, wink, any drug experimentation. Now, there is a lot of information out there that shows that they tinkered with not only LSD, but heroin as well, with some of these mind control experiments. But, of course, legal counsel says there was no drug experimentation. The CIA secretly operated the MKUltra research project for 12 years, beginning in the 1950s, to study the effects of alcohol and various narcotics on witting and unwitting human subjects at a number of American universities and colleges. The New York Times reported that the CIA had sponsored a separate series of hallucinogenic drug experiments conducted during the 1950s at a Harvard-affiliated teaching hospital. And the test studied the effects of LSD on students from Harvard and other Boston area universities, and I believe at the University of California system as well. Steiner said his office will spend a week to 10 days studying the set of CIA documents before releasing materials to the public. He added that he does not yet know whether the two research projects linked to MKUltra involved a contract with Harvard or a consulting relationship with an individual affiliated with the university. Steiner said that the CIA first notified him of Harvard's connection with the mind control project in a letter received in late August of 1977. Steiner said that he requested documents concerning Harvard's involvement with MKUltra a month earlier, and the agent sent him the material a few days ago. In a related development, spokesman for the Campaign to Stop Government Spying announced yesterday that the group has mailed letters to the presidents of 42 American colleges and universities, urging them to, quote, follow the lead of President Bach in adopting guidelines which would prevent secret CIA work on college campuses. I mean, can you even believe this? This is all true. And so they have infiltrated our higher education and learning to pry the minds of our children and direct research and take information and create a spy apparatus that will be used against the general public. Now, what made me really get interested in this is as we had looked at Georgie Porgy Church and some of the work that he was doing with barcoding neurons. Here's something out of a publication called WashingtonExec.com. CIA looks everywhere for technical innovation. And this was October 2nd, 2017. In an interview with Government Matters at the Intelligence and National Security Summit, Don Mariericks, the CIA's Deputy Director for Science and Technology, discussed why innovation is important to our future and where the agency is searching for such innovation. With budget constraints, many federal agencies look inward for innovation and technology, or to students at universities whose labor they can get for free. And the CIA is, however, looking everywhere. The best leverage venture into the CIA enterprise is in NQTEL, but there are other options: venture capitalists, Silicon Valley, startups, academia, and others. If you're in technology and we are not talking to you, then it is an accident, she says. Ding. The key to the CIA's success is basic communication and connections. By establishing and fostering both, Merrick seeks to create a culture where an innovation can thrive and solve national security challenges. Innovation is not just important, but is essential to our future. So now let's move forward to the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering at Harvard University, announced January 26th, 2016, that they have a cross-institutional consortium to map the brain's neural circuits with unprecedented fidelity. And this would be with working with IARPA, which is the DARPA-esque division of the intelligence agencies. The consortium will leverage the Weiss Institute's fluorescent in situ sequencing method to push forward neuronal connectomics, the science of identifying the neuronal cells that work together to bring about specific brain functions. It was developed in 2014 by the Weiss core faculty member George Church, ding, and colleagues, and unlike traditional sequencing technologies, it provides a method to pinpoint the precise locations of specific RNA molecules in intact brain tissue. The consortium will harness this technology to accurately trace and complete set of a neuronal cells and their connecting processes in intact brain tissue over long distances, which is currently difficult to do with other methods. In awarding of a competitive IARPA Microns contract, the consortium will further the overall goals of Obama's Brain Initiative, which aims at improving the understanding of the human mind and uncover new ways to treat neuropathological disorders such as Alzheimer's, of course, and schizophrenia, autism, and epilepsy. They forget to mention Parkinson's disease and PTSD as well. The consortium's work will fundamentally innovate the technological framework used to decipher the principal circuits neurons use to communicate and fulfill specific brain functions and how to turn the human brain into a remotely controllable appliance as part of the Internet of Things. We've covered that over the last few weeks and looked at different ways that the National Institute of Health was looking using optogenetics and ultrasound and bending magnetic waves to be able to influence what neurons do and flipping switches on and off. The learnings can be applied to enhance artificial intelligence and, of course, that as well in different areas of machine learning such as fraud detection, pattern and image recognition, and self-driving car decision making. And we covered all those over the last few days. We have now AI is going to be in every facet of our lives, and they will be neuromorphic type artificial intelligences that will mimic the human brain in the way that it makes decisions. Historically, the mapping of neuronal paths and circuits in the brain has required brain tissue to be sectioned and visualized by electron microscopy. Complete neurons and circuits are then reconstructed by aligning the individual electron microscope images, and this process is costly and inaccurate due to only being one color. We are taking an entirely new approach, says Church, on neuronal connectomics, using immensely colorful barcodes that should overcome this obstacle. And by integrating molecular and physiological information, we are looking to render a high-definition map of neuronal circuits dedicated first to specific sensations and in the future to behaviors and cognitive tasks. Ding. Church is also a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School as well, and a professor of health sciences and technology at Harvard as well as MIT. To map neural connections, the consortium will genetically engineer mice so that each neuron is barcoded throughout its entire structure with a unique RNA sequence. The technique is called BOINC, B-O-I-N-C, which stands for Barcoding of Individual Neuronal Connections, developed by Anthony Zadar at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. Thus, a complete map representing the precise location, shape, and connections of all neurons can be generated. So this is being financed by IARPA, people. IARPA, the intelligence $100 million Apollo Project of the Brain is what it is called. This is out of Scientific American, March 8th, 2016. The U.S. government launches a $100 million Apollo Project of the Brain. Intelligence Project aims to reverse engineer the brain to find algorithms that allow computers to think more like humans. 3 decades ago, the U.S. government launched a Human Genome Project, a 13-year endeavor to sequence and map all of the genes of the human species. Although initially met with skepticism and even opposition, the project has since transformed the field of genetics and is today considered one of the most successful scientific enterprises in all of history. Now, the Intelligence Advanced Research Project Agency, IARPA, a research organization for the intelligence community modeled after the Defense Department's famed DARPA, has dedicated $100 million to a similarly ambitious project. The Machine Intelligence from Cortical Networks program, or more affectionately known as microns, aims to reverse engineer 1 cubic millimeter of the brain, study the way it makes computations, and use those findings to inform algorithms in machine learning and artificial intelligence. IARPA has recruited 3 teams led by David Cox, a biologist and computer scientist at Harvard University, as well as Tae-Sing Ling, a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon University, and Andrea Tolius, a neuroscientist at Baylor College of Medicine in Texas. Each team has proposed its own 5-year approach to the program. So this is before Georgie Porgy Church was involved, obviously. It is a substantial investment because we think it is a critical challenge and it'll have a transformative impact for the intelligence community as well as for the world more broadly, says Jacob Volgenstein at IARPA, who manages the Micron program. Yeah, the intelligence agency is mapping the human brain at a neuronal level. It's going to have a massive change on how they do things such as security and profiling. And like we had read about on Monday, China's new minority report program that determines whether or not you will commit pre-crime. Micron's is a part of Obama's Brain Initiative. Is an attempt to push forward the status quo in brain-inspired computing. And a great deal of technology today already relies on a class of algorithms called artificial neural networks, which, as their name would suggest, are inspired by the architecture, or at least what we know about the architecture of the brain. Thanks to significant increases in computing power and the availability of vast amounts of data on the internet, Facebook can identify faces, Siri can recognize voices, cars can self-navigate, and computers can beat humans at games like chess and Go. These algorithms, however, and Google's AI can teach itself to walk, run, and jump. And these algorithms, however, are still primitive, relying on a highly simplified process of analyzing information for patterns based on models dating back to the 1980s. And this was in 2016, remember. It's already gone far beyond this. Neural networks tended to perform poorly in cluttered environments where the object the computer is trying to identify is hidden by a large number of objects, many which are overlapping and ambiguous. But don't worry, because they have the new K5 and K7 robots. It'll be able to navigate in crowds for your safety in the future and identify potential terror suspects. Based on models dating back to the 1980s, neural networks tended to perform poorly in cluttered environments. These algorithms do not generalize well either, and seeing one or two examples of a dog, for instance, does not teach the computer to identify all dogs. But remember, we found out a while back, just keep feeding them more images, because the bigger the data set, the better the algorithm works. Humans, on the other hand, have seemed to overcome these challenges effortlessly. We can make out a friend in a crowd, focus in on familiar voices in a noisy setting, and deduce patterns in sounds or an image based on just one or a handful of examples. We are constantly learning to generalize without the need for any instructions. And so the Micron's research have turned to the brain to find out what these models are missing. That is the smoking gun, says Cox. And while neural networks retain elements of architecture found in the brain, the computations that they use are not copied directly from the algorithms that neurons use to process information. In other words, the ways in which the current algorithm represents, transforms, and learns from data or engineering solutions determined largely by trial and error. And remember, that's how they're teaching them in virtual reality and in video games as well. They work, but scientists really don't know why, and that was a big problem of AI. Dark art of AI, certainly not well enough to define a way to design a neural network. But remember, they are working with some quantum stuff now that is making leaps and bounds. And whether this neural processing is similar to or different from corresponding operations in the brain remains unknown. So if we go one level deeper and take information from the brain at a computational level, not just an architectural level, we can enhance those algorithms to get them closer to brain-like performance. And again, remember, this is IARPA, the intelligence community, learning how the brain works. Vogelstein of IARPA is optimistic because of recent support given for large-scale neuroscience research with the advent of the Brain Initiative and an enormous number of new tools have come online thanks to the 21st Century Cures Act for interrogating the brain, yeah, or the subject, both at the resolution and the scale that is required for recovering a detailed circuit diagram. So it is a unique point in history. We have the right tools, techniques, and technologies for the very first time ever to reveal a wiring diagram of the brain at the level of every single neuron and every single synapse. How does that get you? So Harvard University, the CIA, IARPA, MK Ultra, and now this Micron's project to map every single neuron and synapse in the human brain. Each team plans to record the brain's roadmap differently. Cox's team will use a technique called two-photon microscopy to measure brain activity in rats as they are trained to recognize objects on a computer screen. The researchers will introduce a modified fluorescence protein, and that is the Weiss Institute and Georgie Porgy Church's technology, which is sensitive to calcium into the rodents. When a neuron fires, the calcium ions rush to that cell, causing the protein to glow brighter. So using a laser scanning microscope, the researchers will be able to watch the neurons as they are firing. That is a little bit like wiretapping the brain, says Cox. And the way you might listen in on a phone call, ding, ding, to see what is going on, we can listen in on important internal aspects of the brain while the animal is alive and doing something. Then 1 cubic millimeter of the rat's brain will be sent to Jeffrey Lichtman. Poor little ratty. A biologist and neuroscientist also at Harvard University will go figure. And in Lichtman's lab, it will be cut into incredibly thin slices and then imaged under a state-of-the-art electron microscope at enough resolution to see all of the wire-like extensions of the brain cells that connect to each other. Tolius's team is taking a similar approach called a three-photon microscopy to look into the deeper layers of the mouse's brain and not just the top layers examined by Cox and his colleagues. Meanwhile, the third team, Lee's, plans to take a far more radical path toward mapping the connectome. Partnering with Georgie Porgy Church, a geneticist at Harvard Medical School, they plan to use DNA barcoding, and they will label every neuron with a unique sequence of nucleotides in a barcode and then chemically connect the barcodes across synapses that reconstruct circuits. And while this method would not provide the same level of spatial information as the microscopy, Lee hopes that it will be faster and more accurate, provided it works at all. That is, this technology has never been successfully used before, but if this barcoding technology works, it will revolutionize neuroscience and connectomics, says Lee. And all that only constitutes the first half of the Microns project, sponsored by IARPA. The scientists next then have to find a way to make all of this information useful for algorithms in machine learning, as well as for IARPA and the intelligence agencies. They have some idea about how to do that. For instance, many researchers believe the brain is Bayesian, and that means that the neurons represent sensory information in the form of probability distributions, calculating the most likely interpretation of an event based on previous experience. This hypothesis is based primarily on the idea of feedback loops in the brain. The information does not only flow forward, but that there are even more connections flowing backward. In other words, researchers hypothesize that perception is not simply mapping from some input to some output. Rather, a constructive process, analysis by synthesis, exists in which the brain maintains and creates an internal representation of the world, generating expectations and predictions that allow it to explain incoming data and plan on how to use it. This is a guiding principle that we are looking at very closely in the hallmarks of the synthetic process, where we confabulate what might be in our world, and then we test that against what we actually see, and then we use our drive to move our perception. For instance, the retina, or if you're looking at artificial intelligence, the GPU, which reacts to light by generating electrical impulses that are relayed to the optic nerve and then to the brain, exactly where they are focusing optogenetics, is actually a two-dimensional structure. So when a person sees an object, perhaps the brain uses such probabilistic models to infer a three-dimensional world from the light hitting the retina on a two-dimensional surface. And if that's the case, though, then the brain has found a much better way of approximating and inferring variables than we are capable of with our current set of mathematical models. And speaking about the two-dimensional surface and a three-dimensional representation, I thought I actually saw a story about that the other day where they have been able to now replicate that utilizing GPUs and AI. And after all, if you are observing a scene with 100 objects, consider only the forward and the backward orientations the objects may have. Two of just many, that is 2,100 possibilities.
We go.
Oh, it's impossible to talk while you have disco music playing in your head. All right. So anyway, long story short, this is a massive, incredibly massive intelligence agency project that is in cahoots with not only Georgie Porgy Church, but with multiple other Harvard scientists and neurologists to map the brain ad nauseum to be able to understand every detail. Editors note, one of the three IARPA teams, the second one led by Tae-Sing Lee and George Church, wanted to provide an additional detail about the organization of the project mentioned in the article, providing the following statement, quote, each team addresses all of these areas of the program, one, theory, physiology, and machine learning, two, data collection, and three, data processing. IARPA awarded six separate contracts for Micron to three different teams, to Harvard University, Carnegie Mellon University, and the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering at Harvard University, as well as Baylor University and the Allen, and that is Allen from the co-founder of Microsoft, Institute for Brain Science, as well as Princeton University. And within all three teams, all of the primes work collectively. And the reason for this organization is that the different primes have different capabilities, and so they are teamed up as necessary to ensure each key team can do the full scope of this project. So where do you leave that? Well, something I wanted to talk about was the MKUltra program and these Cold War mind experiments that had gone on with the collaboration between the CIA and Harvard back in the 50s, the 60s, and was ended in the 70s. Who were the test subjects? Well, according to the hearing report, and that was the hearing that happened in 1977. I don't remember what it was called, the Something Commission, where this was all unveiled. MKUltra, inside the CIA's Cold War mind control experiments. 40 years ago, and this story doesn't have, July 21st, 2017, Freedom of Information Act requests revealed the terrifying scope of Project MKUltra, which was a CIA program which used human subjects to experiment with mind control for more than 10 years. Although the majority of documentation relating to the project has been destroyed by 1977 because of Watergate, enough remains that, along with witness testimony, two congressional investigations were able to build an eye-opening picture of the program. Over 11 years, thousands of Americans were subjects of unethical and often illegal experiments to test mind control techniques, from subliminal messaging to sensory deprivation to the use of hallucinogenic drugs. Project MKUltra, launched at the height of the Cold War, was intended to give the U.S. the edge over the Soviet Union in psychological warfare by any means necessary. In 1977, CIA Director Stanford Turner testified that MKUltra was set up to investigate, quote, the use of biological and chemical materials in altering human behavior. This included experiments designed to render the introduction of hypnosis easier and enhance the ability of individuals to withstand privatization, torture, and coercion, as well as produce amnesia, shock, and confusion, just like they are now working on the American public to portray. The mass destruction of documents relating to MKUltra means that we may never know the full extent of the project, making it a rich source of conspiracy theory and speculation. According to the hearing report, 86 different institutions, including universities, mental hospitals, and prisons, participated in the CIA-sponsored experiments on human subjects. Vulnerable people were among the unwitting subjects of the top secret experiments, and many of them conducted by doctors, scientists, and academics secretly under contract to the intelligence agency. Chemical tests were even conducted on terminal cancer patients, presumably because the experiments were anticipated to have long-lasting detrimental, if not lethal, effects, says Gizmodo. ethical standards and medical safeguards were often non-existent, one of MKUltra's sub-projects was to, quote, observe the behavior of unwitting persons being questioned after having been given a drug, according to the 1977 congressional hearing. Under such unwitting test subjects, military scientist Dr. Frank Olson fell to his death from a New York hotel window 9 days after the CIA agent spiked his drink with LSD, provoking a nervous breakdown. Among the most high-profile suspected victims was good old Ted Kaczynski, who would later become the infamous Unabomber. In his second year as a student at Harvard University, the 17-year-old math prodigy Kaczynski volunteered for a psychology study run by Dr. Henry Murray, a Harvard professor who was secretly employed by the CIA. For 3 years, the volunteers were subjected to aggressive, traumatizing sessions in which their most cherished beliefs were torn apart as part of a research into emotional responses to extreme stress under interrogation. Following the experiment, Kaczynski became increasingly withdrawn and eventually dropped out of society altogether. And from a remote backwoods cabin in Montana, he developed a nihilistic, anti-capitalist, anti-technology political philosophy. Eventually, he would turn to violence to further his agenda, justifying his deadly letter bomb campaign in a rambling manifesto, which we read it. It's not quite as rambling as they make you think, which, according to expert witnesses for the defense at his murder trial, showed the influences of the traumatic Harvard experiment. The mass destruction of records means that we may never know for sure whether or not Murray's experiment was an official part of MKUltra, and Kaczynski's brother, David, wrote in 2010. Either way, Kaczynski was one of the thousands of victims of a, quote, scientific culture that failed to learn and recoil from the grotesquely unethical conduct of Nazi scientists who treated human subjects with no more empathy than they would treat an inanimate object. So I came across something that was titled, and it looks like it's an excerpt from a book, Hearing Voices, The Hidden History of the CIA's Electromagnetic Mind Control Experiments, Global Alert, by Alex Constantine. Controlling human behavior by remote radio transmission isn't science fiction. It is a fact, and after years of secret experiments, the U.S. government has achieved its goal in breaking and entering American minds at will. Man hallucinates and says microwaves are murdering him. Now, I don't know if anyone saw, but we've mentioned the Cuban emissaries being potentially attacked in Cuba, the U.S. diplomats. And I have to get to my page. Hold on, because I didn't bring this story up. But the U.S. has recalled all of their diplomats now, saying that it is too dangerous because our diplomats are being attacked by some sort of sonic weapon. They are not really sure what kind, but causing issues that most scientists are saying aren't like what they would expect from a sonic weapon, thereby admitting that they knew about some of this weaponry. Un momento, por favor. Excuse me for not being fully ready. Though I was, but I'm missing my notebook, so it makes it doubly hard because I can't get any of my work done when I am not sitting here doing exactly what I'm not supposed to be doing in the office. Here. U.S. to recall Cuba embassy staff after mysterious attacks on diplomats. It looks like we will be recalling them. U.S. to recall Cuba embassy staff urges Americans not to travel following mysterious attacks on diplomats. Diplomats began experiencing unexplained health problems almost a year ago. However, U.S. investigators still don't know who or what is behind the attacks. At least 21 diplomats and their families are believed to have been harmed by these mysterious attacks, some with consequences as serious as traumatic brain injury and permanent hearing loss. Until the government of Cuba can ensure the safety of our diplomats in Cuba, our embassy will be reduced to emergency personnel in order to minimize the number of diplomats at risk of exposure to harm. The U.S. and congressional officials said Washington was crafting a plan for drawing down the staff from the Havana embassy in response to unexplained incidences. The decision deals a blow to already delicate ties between the U.S. and Cuba. Cuba's foreign chief of U.S. affairs, Josefina Vidal, describes the move as hasty. We consider the decision announcement today by the U.S. government through the State Department is hasty and will affect bilateral relations. Cuba has insisted it has no idea what is harming American diplomats, and officials have discouraged Mr. Trump from letting the matter become politicized. Officials at the embassy in Havana would lose roughly 60% of their U.S. staff. And in a new travel warning issued on Friday local time last week, the United States will say some of the attacks have occurred in Cuban hotels, that while some American tourists weren't known to have been hurt, they could be if exposed in travel to Cuba. However, tour companies, airlines, cruises, and others in the travel industry have said that they would continue taking Americans to Cuba. We continue to believe that Cuba is safe destinations for our travelers, and we will be running our tours until our assessment changes, says CEO of Smart Tours. Travel providers point out that there are no reports of American travelers having been harmed, so don't worry about it. Keep going to Cuba. But let's get back to now. I don't know. I'm having trouble here. About some CIA-sponsored mind control. So man hallucinates and says that microwaves are murdering him. A report from March 21st, 1979, edition of the LA Herald Examiner. The subject of the article, electronics engineer Leonard Kill, K-I-L-L-E, claimed that his brain had been destroyed in mind control experiments by the CIA-sponsored psychiatrist Mark Vernon of Boston City Hospital, ding ding, same city as Harvard, and UCLA's Frank Ervin. And remember, they were doing some of the UC California sections of MK Ultra as well. Kill was a co-inventor of the Land camera, named for Edwin Land of the Polaroid Corporation, a veteran researcher in government-sponsored mind control programs. Land had founded the Scientific Engineering Institute on behalf of the CIA. And in July 1968, in South Vietnam's Ben Ho Hospital, SEI, and then as the Scientific Engineering Institute teams, had implanted electrodes in the skull of Viet Cong prisoners of war in an experimental attempt to direct the behavior of brain wire subjects by remote control. Ding! And upon completion of the experiments, the POWs were shot and cremated by a company of Green Berets. In 1966, Kill suspected that his wife was having an affair. She denied it, and he flew into rages. A psychiatrist interpreted Kill's anger as a, quote, personality pattern disturbance, unquote, and referred him to Mark and Irwin for neurological tests. And although Mark and Irwin described Kill's behavior as dangerous, Kill's most violent outburst consisted of throwing tin cans at his wife, and he missed. Hospitalized by the order of the psychiatrist, Kill was involuntarily subjected to experimental brain surgery. And during the touch-and-go operation, electrical strands were implanted in Kill's brain, and each strand was studded with approximately 20 electrodes. And only after the installation of the apparatus was Kill enlisted to sign his official consent to the procedure, and the electrodes were already in place, zapping his brain. Following the nightmarish operation, Dr. Peter Brigham of the Center to Study Psychiatry investigated Kill's case and found that despite Marks and Irvin's reports of therapeutic success, that the post-op patient was totally disabled and subject to nightmarish terrors, that he would be caught and operated on again at the Massachusetts General Hospital. Ding, ding, ding. In 1971, a hospital attendant discovered Kill's holding a metal wastebasket over his head to, quote-unquote, stop the microwaves. And the sympathetic doctor at Boston's VA hospital where Kill was transferred ordered for him a large sheet of aluminum foil so he could fashion himself a protective helmet. Uninformed that Kill had been fitted with electrodes, the VA doctors diagnosed him as delusional, paranoid. And according to Kill, Mark and Irwin controlled his moods by remote electronic stimulation. Kill insisted they can turn me up and down. In the 1920s, the development of the electroencephalograph, or the EEG, the same type of technology that Facebook is experimenting with for mind-controlled computers, an apparatus for directing and recording brainwaves, offered brain psychologists the key to unlocking the mysteries of the body's pivotal organ of thought, intellect, and personality. And while giving hope for a specific means of mapping mental health ailments, the newfound electrical pattern to brain function was also opening a monstrous Pandora's box, the possible radio controlling of the mind. In 1934, Drs. E. L. Chafee and R. U. Light published a, quote, method for remote control of electrical stimulation of the nervous system, unquote, an introductory monograph on the electromagnetic mind control methodology. And in 1964, electromagnetic response researcher Dr. Jose Delgado of Corbana, Spain, climbed into the bull ring and with a push of a button, triggered an electrode implanted into the brain tissue of a charging bull and halted the beast in its tracks. Also in 1934, Russian physiologist L.L. Vasilev published, quote, critical evaluation of the hyponagogic method, an article detailing the experimentation of I.F. Toshevsky in remote radio control of the human brain at a distance of one or more rooms and under condition where participants wouldn't know or suspect that they were being experimented upon. Reported Velisev, one such experiment was carried out in a park with the subject at a distance. A post-hypnotic mental suggestion to go to sleep was complied with within a minute. The CIA created an EMR laboratory at Allen Memorial in Montreal, Canada research facility in 1943, and the heart of the Allen Memorial Radio Telemetry Laboratory, which was a telemeter in an electrical apparatus for measuring the quantity transmitting the result by radio to a distant station and indicating or recording it. It was called a grind room. In the grind room, an involuntary subject would be strapped into a chair by force if necessary, and violent resistance was quelled with Curare, a powerful plant extract used in poison arrows by South American Indians and used in medicine to produce muscular paralysis. And from a head bristling with electrodes to transducers, the subdued subject's brainwaves would be beamed to a nearby reception room crammed with voice analyzers and radio receivers cobbled together by laboratory assistants Leonard Rubinstein. Rubinstein, a man who lacked professional medical credentials, believed passionately in the political uses of mind control. Experiments on Allen Memorial's telemetry lab, he declared, would one day help governments, quote, keep tabs on people without their knowing, unquote. Depatterning, which is the systemic annihilation of a subject's mind and memory, was accomplished at Allen Memorial with heavy doses of LSD, barbiturate-induced comas lasting up to 65 days, and electroconvulsive therapy administered at 75 times the customary dose for psychiatric therapies. Following depatterning, the psychic driving, the repetition of a recorded message for up to 16 hours a day pre-programmed the freshly emptied brain. And in 1965, the New York Times reported Obscure EMR experiments secretly funded by the government under a front page headline, Mind Control Coming. Scientists warn, quoted in an article, the University of California psychology professor Dr. David Krench cautioned, electromagnetic resonance research may carry with it even more serious implications than the achievement of the atomic physicists. Earlier in 1963, the CIA issued manual prepared on the study of radio hypnotic intracerebral control explained that when a part of your brain receives a tiny electrical impulse from outside sources such as vision, hearing, etc., an emotion is produced. Anger at the sight of a gang of boys beating an old woman, for example, and the same emotions of anger can be created by artificial radio signals sent to your brain by a controller. If you could instantly feel the same white-hot anger without any apparent reason. Richard Helms, plans director for the CIA, oversaw the military-oriented EMR research pursuing the possible transmission of strategic subliminal messages into the aggregate minds of enemy populations. In a 1964 memo to the Warren Commission, regarding the possibility of Lee Harvey Oswald having been a mind-controlled assassin, Helms outlined the existence of, quote, biological radio communication. Cybernetics, which is the science of communication and control theory that is concerned with the study of automatic control systems such as the brain and mechanical electrical communications, can be used in molding the child's character, the inculcation of knowledge and techniques, the amassing of experience, the establishment of social behavior patterns, all functions which can be summarized as control of the growth of process of the individual. The subsequent CIA directive, summarized in a brochure on cybernetic techniques distributed by Mankind Research Unlimited, an electromagnetic response study facilitated in Washington, D.C., detailed the CIA's development of a means by which information of a modest rate can be fed to humans utilizing other senses than sight or hearing. And according to the brochure, the CIA's cybernetic technique, based on Eastern European research, Wink, involved beaming information via radio frequencies to individual human nerve cells. The purpose, the directive stated, was the, quote, enhancement of a subject's mental and physical performance. In 1965, the DOD discovered that the American embassy in Moscow was being purposefully irradiated by Russians with massive levels of microwaves. Ding, ding, ding. And by that time, the DOD's secretive Advanced Research Project Agency at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research in the nation's capital had itself developed a prestigious arsenal of electromagnetic weapons. I hope I didn't forget to turn on my outro.
Oh, there we go. All right, guys, this goes on and on.